Hey, welcome to the Science of Parenting podcast, where we connect you with research-based information that fits your family. We'll talk about the realities of being a parent and how research can help guide our parenting decisions. I'm Mackenzie Johnson, parent of two littles with their own quirks, and I'm a parenting educator.
And I'm Lori Cordles, and I'm the parent of three in three different life stages. One is launched, one is in college, and one is in high school. And I'm also a parenting educator. What we're sharing about now is this parenting model called RPM3. And today we're actually on the first M because we've talked about, what have we talked about? The R is?
Respond.
Respond. The P is?
Prevent.
It is. And so today we're going to talk about monitoring.
Yes.
That seems like a dun 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 kind of
this
word.
Is serious.
Yes.
Yes. So this season we're looking at this research-based approach to parenting, this RPM3 model. And as Lori said, we've covered that R of respond and that P on prevent. If you've been listening so far this season, and today is on monitor. And so those other two M's are mentor and model. And so it is this little acronym that helps us think about the big picture of parenting and some of the tasks that research shows when parents do can bring in positive outcomes for kids. And so, RPM3, all things we do in our parenting, right? Mentoring, modeling, monitoring, all of them. But the one thing I really just want to give the reminder of every episode, I just want everyone to know that when we're talking about this, we know that even as we dive into each one, so like today, diving into monitoring, we know that parenting requires a lifelong perspective.
Yes.
And so, we're not required to accomplish like every task perfectly, every part of every day. That is not what we're talking about. But we're talking about our parenting being built throughout our lifetime, and that our overall tasks and decisions with our kids, that they know that, in this case today, monitor. So when you think about these different parts and pieces we talk through, we're keeping that lifelong perspective in mind. And another important thing to note is that this season is really built on, we always like to cite research in our podcast, and it's built on a publication from the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National, want to make sure I get it right, National Institute of Child Health and Human Development. So it's called Adventures in Parenting. So we're going to be talking a lot about the information from that particular booklet. So I think we should just dive right in with that research. I mean, it's good stuff.
It is a super cool booklet as well. So with great, great information. So the first little piece of research that we need to share is, what the heck are we talking about? So let's give it a definition, right?
That big word we said, monitoring.
Yeah, monitoring. Dun, dun, dun. We need Mackenzie. We need our producer to put in some music there. Dun, dun, dun. Monitoring. All right. The definition for monitoring is, monitoring is about paying attention to your child's contact with their surrounding world. So being a monitoring parent combines the idea of asking questions, paying attention to, making decisions for, and setting limits. And this might mean that, you're monitoring where your children are, what they're doing, who they're with, and it also is involved in that online and, screen stuff.
Yes, the online and in person. So yeah, monitoring sounds like a very serious word, but really most of us are doing this regardless of the age of our kids. It's just figuring out some kind of tips and tricks and strategies. Knowing where they are, who they're with, what's going on, both in person and online.
Exactly. So do you have an example of how you've monitored your children?
We know my kid, if you've listened before, my kids are little. So I've got a toddler and kind of an older preschooler. And so I guess one that comes to mind for me is just the idea of what are you doing right now? Like, sometimes if they're like in the other room or if they're outside
or quiet.
Yeah. Exactly. And so at this age, it's a little more like the stage that we're in as a family is a little more of kind of keeping my eyes and my ears, knowing what's going on with them. But even another one that's kind of newish to our family is some of the TV, like some of the shows, kind of that kind of screen time, especially in the middle of the pandemic. I know lots of parents can relate in terms of we've increased some of that screen time that we let our kids have. And so my daughter is just kind of getting into like getting to choose her own shows and doing some of that without us being right there with her. And so I've been monitoring like, okay, what has she watched? What are the ratings of things? And so I've played with some of that kind of stuff to kind of monitor and help keep safe because I'm not always doing the eyes on right now.
Exactly.
What about you? What's been some monitoring that you can think of?
So I think about as my older daughter started to ride her bike, how far could she go down the block on her bike? As they progressed into middle school, it maybe was where they were with whom, you know, was a parent there supervising. As a teenager, you know, as they began to drive, it became that monitoring of what time they were going to be where and how they were getting there again. And I'll tell you what, I still monitor my daughter who has launched into having her own, you know, full-time job. And I still monitor, you know, where is she at this week or this weekend? Yes. So it doesn't stop. Yes. I think my parents monitor me. You know, my dad always ends up calling in when we're recording, right?
Yes. He's just monitoring. Where is she at?
Who's monitoring?
Lifelong, right?
Lifelong. It is.
So yeah, it's really just that idea of like monitoring is just knowing what's going on, where they're at, kind of stuff, right?
The super cool thing about research is that it tells us that when we monitor our children, when we monitor where they are, who they're with, what they are learning, what they're doing, they're actually less likely to engage in that risky behavior. So things like substance abuse or delinquent activity, you know, because they know we're monitoring them, they may make better choices along the way. And so, you know, it's maybe a little boost from research that says it's okay to monitor.
Yes.
Yes.
There's benefits. There's good stuff here.
And it's not about, you know, being in control of every action and every thought and, you know, every person that they come in contact with. But it's really more about that ability for us to catch early risk-taking behaviors and honestly being able to have conversations before they get further down the path. It's really tied closely to what we talked about last week, which was preventing. So
yes,
monitoring helps us to prevent.
Absolutely. Well, and you know, I think of, you know, there's kind of two sides of it. The benefits of we are preventing, right? Some of those maybe risky behaviors, like, ooh, my mom knows I'm here and my mom knows I'm with so-and-so, or, you know, my dad asked me, you know, how we were getting here. They know some of the details. So if something's going on, they're probably going to find out, right? And so just knowing our kids, knowing that we are in tune with what's going on can reduce the likelihood of that. But there's also this kind of flip side benefit of like, I want to know where you are and who you're with because I care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that idea of my parents are asking because they care what's going on with me. And so I think there's also that positive relationship aspect, you know, that we can create opportunities to monitor our kids and they can help actually establish trust. You know, so often we talk about the trust that we have in our kids of, can I trust them? Are they making good decisions? But there's also that attitude of trust that like my parents consistently want to know what's going on with me. And so establishing that this is kind of the norm in your house and even at a young age, you know, with your kids, like when I want to go to a friend's house, my parents are going to ask this kind of stuff because they want to know where I am and that I'm safe. And I think that, you know, monitoring really does build trust, but both ways.
Absolutely. That trust that my parent is going to take care of me. I trust that they're helping me to stay safe. 100%. Yes.
Yes. And so, you know, that does kind of get into different, what's it look like to monitor, you know, my 10-year-old versus my 17-year-old versus a 3-year-old.
Exactly.
Monitoring. Okay. Lifelong. Like, so let's dig into that a little bit of what's it look like across these different ages? And so, you know, starting with our really littles, it's like, okay, so monitoring my infants and toddlers, like, okay, they're with me all the time. Like, right? They're always here. And so, it's much more about knowing where they are and what they're doing, which when they're this young, most of the time, we're right there. It can also be things like getting to know, you know, their child care provider or other people that they're with so that you know that that's a safe person. But it is a little more straightforward when there's this little, right? Because yes. We make most of the decisions about who they are, who they're with or what they're doing there. So it's a little more straightforward. But so I think of more of the like, yep, you know where they're at. But it can also be the setting limits, right? Yes. And so I have a climber. Like my son is a climber. My daughter was not. So I feel like a brand new, like, what do I do? He's like climbing on everything. But so a part of that monitoring, right? I know I need to stay in tune with where he's at so he's not climbing on something. But then setting that limit of like, oh, you can't climb on this. But okay, but there's also like, you know, I tend to think of it as really simple of like, okay, I know where they're at. And okay, I set limits to keep them safe. But when we were talking through this, you just talked about it so well in terms of some of these other aspects of monitoring with these young kids and why it's important. Like, can you just like touch on a little bit of that? Because yeah, I'm like, okay, setting limits. Okay, I know where they are. All set. But there is a little more here.
Well, there is. And that idea of monitoring, we talked about, you know, having conversations with your older children, but you also need to have conversations with your littles. So I think of that example of your son climbing, and you don't just merely say, get down, stop it. Mm-hmm. You don't yell that across the room. You go over to him and you pick him up and you say to him in a calm, cool, collected voice, because you've stopped, breathed, and talked, right? You know, we need to have our feet on the floor. We don't want to get owies. Feet belong on the floor. Mm-hmm. And that tone of voice, your body language, while he maybe can't understand exactly what your words mean, his brain is right now this emotional center. And so he can sense the affect that you have, the trust that your nonverbal language is giving yes. him that says, she's picking me up off of the table. She's saying something about my feet. I know the word feet because of my age. I'm a toddler, right? But that's mm-hmm. about the only other word I understand that she's speaking. But her body is relaxed. Her touch is soothing. Her voice is calm. I trust that whatever it is she's saying to me is keeping me safe. And yeah. as his brain grows and he learns the words that you're also saying, his body has already developed this trust of you and your voice and your movements and your affect. And so monitoring is also about communicating the whys behind yes. our, you know, our limits.
Yeah.
Limits are said, we like to say love is about setting limits. And mm-hmm. it's so very true. Research tells us that children mm-hmm. feel more secure and we have more positive adult-child relationships when we set limits. So
yes. Yes. So you
was that it?
Yes. Well, you were just talking about like their brain knows, even when, you know, as they get older, they know more words, like, you know, they hear more words, they recognize, even if they can't say them, we know all that. Okay. And even when they can't, like, even when they don't know those words, that they're still getting all that other stuff. Because I do, you know, even you saying the nonverbals, I'm like, so I tend to say like, oh, like no owies. Like when we're doing something that could get our kids, like get my toddler hurt, like, oh, no owies. And then I try to say what I want them to do instead. Like, mm-hmm. oh, no owies, like feet on the floor. Mm-hmm. But I tend to like, oh, no owies. Like, you know, when to talk about that affected tone of voice, like that's like a very toddler parent voice. Like, oh, no owies, like you could get hurt, like feet on the floor. But that they're getting all of that as I set that limit. I think that's important it's not quite as straightforward. Like, yes, we know where they are, so we're not monitoring that aspect of it. But the setting limits and stuff is different.
It is. So. How about for your preschooler?
Well, okay, so honestly, pandemic life and and just parent life. But like screens at this age, you know, thinking about my preschooler and even as we get ready to like move into some of that school age stuff, those kids too, we see the screen time for this generation really starting to come into play more. It does look different than when there was like one TV for the whole home in the living room and everybody was right there. It looks different now that there might be multiple screens and things like that. But we do know. Yeah.
I'm going to interrupt you because you said something while we were doing a walkthrough and I was like, oh my gosh, I've never heard that word before. You called yourself a digital native.
Yes, I am.
Blown.
So I've grown up like immersed in technology. Like, and so it's familiar to me. It's not like I'm learning a new language of like the digital world. Like, that is the generation I'm in. So yes, I'm a digital native parent.
So your preschooler is a digital native.
A digital native, which depending on your age, right? Mm-hmm. That might feel like a big gap between you as the parent and your kids if you're not a digital native. And so all of that picking up right away. And so yes, so I think screen time is a new monitoring thing in this preschool school age that's different from that kind of infant toddlerhood. But then also thinking about at this age, our kids start to have a little more time away from us, right? So maybe, you know, for our preschooler, it's having a play date at somebody else's house that we don't go along to. You know, in our school ager, now they maybe have a practice they go to, you know, or things like that, or they ride with somebody else's parents. And so those kinds of things, you know, even like playing in the yard like that, instead of every time they're outside, I'm outside, like, in this age group is when we start to figure out some of that little more independent stuff. So, so I actually have two things, like two tips that they talk about for this age group. One is trying to get in tune with what our kids are reading, watching, playing, listening to, you know, especially with that broad access to screens, you know, even just sitting beside them.
Yes.
When, you know, when we call that co-viewing with some of that kind of stuff. Or, you know, I've played, like I said, I've played with some of the rating limits, like, okay, if I'm not right now, especially like if I'm not sitting next to you when you're scrolling through that to pick a show, I at least know what the rating is of it because I've played with that. And so, but knowing what they're watching and doing is one thing. Just getting a better sense of what that content is can prepare for those conversations of monitoring. And then I think the other thing that's really important at this age is kind of opening that line of communication around monitoring. Like, do you feel like, you know, that this age with your kids, that's kind of where you really started to get into it a little more?
Absolutely. I think that, again, that piece of communication and what we talked about with infants and toddlers is the same with preschoolers and school agers. Have conversation. Keep those lines of communication open. Open them early. Keep talking. Yes. Keep talking. Keep talking.
Yes.
And more talking.
Yes. And more talk. Not coughing.
Yeah.
More talking. Okay. More talking. But because I do think, you know, we can set this norm for what will be this lifelong, right, ongoing conversation about monitoring. And I think something that's kind of unique about this age is the like surprising conversations that come with our kids spending more time with people that aren't just us.
Yes.
And so, you know, they come home. Yeah. The things they say, but also the things that come home and you're like, where did you hear that? Or where did you learn that? And I know that sometimes because it does like catch me off guard, like, okay, I didn't teach you that. whatever that is. And I think sometimes it can be so easy to just like to react in that, right? We talked about responding versus reacting. And I think that really plays a role in this communication of like, okay, if my child says something to me that surprises me, that maybe they heard from a friend or heard somewhere else. And if I always jump on it, right? If I always react like, whoa, you can't say that, or whoa,
yes,
that can sometimes like narrow, I think, those lines of communication.
Or shut them down.
Yeah. Just like, all right, lock door. And I'm not going to say that's like, I'm not telling my parents the new stuff I learned.
Yeah.
And so I do think that is another really important part as kids, as our kids test out, like, okay, I learned something that's different from what my parents have said, or this is new. Because sometimes kids might have that new information and not know that that's not like normal to say, or
exactly,
right? Like a swear word, or, you know, whatever the things might be, or someone, a phrase that you're like, whoa, that's not a phrase we would say. All of that to say, I think taking the time to stop, breathe, talk, knowing that like sometimes our kids in this age, those preschool school leaders are going to say stuff that might surprise us. Mm-hmm. and taking that breath and asking a few more questions about, like, you know, I haven't heard you say that before, or, you know, that's not usually something I say, like, where did you hear this? Or, but doing that from a calm place and kind of open, keeping the conversation open about it instead of shutting the conversation down, right? Like, whoa, you can't say that. So open lines of communication, along with getting to know what our kids are up to, playing, reading, doing, watching, yada, yada.
Exactly.
So those are the tips for this preschool, school age. What about our preteens and teens? You are, I'm going to call you the master in this area.
Oh, gosh.
I don't have any teens and preteens. I'll say,
how about this? How about I'm more experienced? I'm not a
master. There
you go.
Thank you. Yes. So, Rory's more experienced here.
As we look at those ages, it's really about the details. And do we know some of the details about who they're with, what's going on, where they're at, et cetera? And, you know, the whole idea is that at this age, they want to be more independent. They want to make their own decisions. And it can feel hard because the thing is that we do need to gradually teach them and allow them to make their own decisions. Because the last thing we want to do is, you know, send them out the door at 18 or whatever age and they have not made decisions on their own.
Yes. We're building to that independence.
Yes. Yes. So we need to allow them those opportunities. And so a couple of tips might be to, first of all, know the people that your child is spending time with. And we talk about this, you know, even at young ages with stranger danger, et cetera, but that doesn't stop at the teen years. Mm-hmm. Just because your child says, hey, I'm going to be out with Jack, Janie, Jimmy, and Jesse, like, do you know all those J's? Mm-hmm. And so do you know who they are, what they do, you know, do you know their parents? Do you know their guardians? What kind of activities are they involved in? It's okay to get the details. and then once you have those details, it's important to be able to give direction without being so rigid. And let me give you an example here. So I don't know if you've ever had the experience of someone telling you, absolutely not, no. With no reason at all. I mean, have you ever had that experience where someone told you absolutely no?
Like, no.
No.
And just, my thought is like, yeah. Like, yeah.
Right?
Like, actually, I'm thinking if like our supervisor was like, no, you can't. It's like, oh, there might be a way I could.
There might be, right? Exactly. So, I mean, as adults, we recognize that there are times where when someone just flat out tells us no, that we want to go against that, push against it. You know,
one example, childlike response. Yes.
Yes. I can think of a time where when I was a teenager and cable was new back then, it was called cable. Cable TV, not direct TV. And there was a particular movie on that my parents did not want me to watch. And they just said no. And I couldn't understand why just plain no. And so do you know what I did? Can you have
I can guess? Guess. I can guess.
Like, and I'm not necessarily a risk taker or a boundary pusher, but that no was such a firm, rigid no that of course I watched that movie. And my parents found out and guess that's what they did. They took away cable. Like, cable was brand new.
Take it away.
my desire was to have a conversation and say, but hey, hello, parents. I can actually see, know, and learn about whatever it is in this movie you don't want me to see, learn, and know from other movies, from my friends, from my friends' parents, et cetera. And so that firm no, it was too rigid. And it really, you know, maybe pushed me over into the direction of taking that risk-taking behavior. And so my tip is sometimes the answer is no. And there are times where it should be yes, and we'll watch it with you, or yes, and you need to be home at 9:30, or yes, and I get to have your passwords to all your accounts. And so
like a yes with a boundary or expectation or a limit.
Exactly.
Like, so it doesn't have to be no always. There's a lot of times when it can be a yes and if.
Yes.
Yeah. Or maybe just yes if.
Yes if.
Yep.
Absolutely. Yep. You know, so those two tips are, you know the people your children are with and give direction without being rigid.
Yeah. Okay. So I do have something that I, you know, anticipate, like, okay, my kids aren't this age yet, but I, you know, I'm thinking about that. There's going to be times, you know, as kids become their own people, that they have like interests or, you know, maybe even friends or hobbies that we don't totally love, you know, things that maybe I don't even understand. I'm like, oh, what is the appeal of that? Or, you know, don't understand or even totally approve of. Yes.
Yes.
You know what? And I know that like that's a natural part of becoming independent, but do you have any tips for how we identify when it needs to be like a no, or it can be a yes if, or like
absolutely
just because I don't like it, or you know, like, you know, how do we make those decisions?
Yes, I totally 100% hear you and have been there. And yeah. And I think the most important thing that you can do is, you know, ask yourself this question. Is the person, place, or thing destructive to your child's physical well-being? Is it destructive to their emotional well-being? Is it destructive to, you know, their brain development? And so, you know, if that answer is no, it's not destructive, I'm not fond of it, it makes me uncomfortable, we actually maybe need to consider, how can it be a no, however, let's have a conversation. Or maybe it's a yes, and let's have a conversation. Let's find some limits that we can both agree on. We talked about this idea that firm no without any conversation can actually push our kids into those activities even more so.
Yes. And okay, so, you know, currently my reality is that my daughter currently like matches her favorite color to mine, like, you know, like, and so I know that won't always be the case. They won't always be that interested. And so, yeah, as our kids get to have those interests that we maybe don't love. So finding those ways that like, okay, no, I don't love this, but it's not destructive, that we're having some of those conversations. And I guess I can even think of an example where my own mom did this. I remember like watching a show and her coming in and being like, you know, like, okay, I don't know what you're watching. Yeah. But I remember us having a conversation kind of about how, like, what about it she didn't like, you know, like, you know, this is different than how we do things in our family, or, you know, this kind of goes against what we practice or what we believe in, our family values are. And so, you know, that conversation, you know, that it wasn't necessarily like, this is against what we believe or, you know, our values. And so now we're not going to like, no, you can't watch it. Instead, it's, you know, like, notice, right? Like, notice this is different.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. So this theme going through of conversation, right?
Yeah. Look at that talk. Okay. Okay. But so sometimes the answer is like, is this destructive? Sometimes the answer is yes, right? Like, sometimes our kids are going to want to do stuff that's not okay. Like, that is destructive, you know, to their physical or emotional health. Mm-hmm. And so that is like a no, right? That's not a, yeah, you can do this if. That's like, no, exactly. This is not okay.
It's a firm no.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and right now there's a lot of research showing the high incidence of youth vaping, an alternative to cigarette smoke. And there, the research does show that it is destructive to the development of the brain. You know, just the brain wiring itself, especially in those adolescent years. And so, you know, that's kind of a firm no. And the key, again, is conversation. And the, you know, the research behind it, the why behind it. As adults, we expect someone to share the why. But why don't we allow that same opportunity for our youth? It's just something that we need to consider, that yes, there can be firm no's, but to get more compliance with the children and the youth, the good idea might be to bring them alongside to learn about the whys. You know, what kind of things can you share with them? Can they research? Can they create a PowerPoint for you on how it's destructive to their brain?
Yes. The things we would do to convince another adult, like,
exactly,
provide a thorough reasoning. And I think another, I think one of the things that, as we were talking through this, that kind of stood out for me is, yes, when there's going to be a no, be sure that you're ready to provide that reason why it's a no. But I also think like that this is an opportunity when you know you're going to have to give a firm no to our kids who have more independence, that you're kind of preparing yourself that there might be conflict.
Yes.
You know, and so preparing yourself that when you go to have this conversation with your kid, that you're calm, you know, that you've mm-hmm. taken the chance to stop, breathe, get your body regulated before you do head into that conversation where you're saying like, you've been doing this. This is something that's not safe. I can't let you do that. Right. My job is to keep you safe and prepare yourself that there might be a strong reaction. Right. But hopefully by coming in, you know, calm, cool, collected and empathizing, you know, listening to your kid and all those things, prepare yourself for the conflict, but that you guys can actually use it as an opportunity to move forward. Right.
Absolutely.
That monitoring is, can build that bond, like we said.
Yes. And, you know, here's one other piece of research that is super affirming. And that is that most teens report that they still value their relationship with their parent. And it's just as much as they valued it when they were younger. And mm-hmm. so, you know, this idea that they still value what we have to say, the idea is that they're just expanding where they're getting their input from. They still value us. They still value our yes. input. And, you know, so cling to that as you stop, breathe, talk.
Absolutely. And as their time, right? If we, there's like a little circle, I'm going to give a word picture, Lori.
Okay.
If there's a little, you know, circle of how much of their time they spend with their parents, right? We might see that go down as we see that friend group or that activities one get bigger. But the values circle, right? Parents are still getting most of the mm-hmm. chunk. Even if it's not the 100% we had when they were 2 years old, the parents are still the most important chunk, is what the research is telling us, of where kids get their values.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they
Absolutely.
Care what we think. They do.
Yes, they do.
So, okay, so we've talked through what is this idea of monitoring, why it's important, right? There's lots of benefits of why we do this, and then talking through what it looks like at these different ages.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, this brings us to kind of the reality, right? We've been talking about some of the research on it. What is a practical strategy? It's like, okay, monitoring is important. How am I going to do this? Yeah. And so we came up with this kind of set of questions that for you to reflect on what information you might want when you're monitoring your kids. So I've got a couple questions for monitoring when our kids are not with us.
Okay.
So, or even online, these can kind of apply.
Absolutely.
So the first question, this is like a who, what, where, when kind of deal. So the first is, who is my child with and what do I know about them, mm-hmm. right? Do I know who this friend is or who this adult is that they're going to be with? The what is my child doing there? Right? Like, okay, I know they're over at the school. What are they doing though? What are they doing over there? So the who are they with? The what are they doing? The where are they, right? That physical location that they're in or online, right? Where are they? Are they, what kind of things are they doing? Are they in an app, whatever? The when will my child be done or will my child be home or when are they leaving, right? That time frame around it. And then the how is, which I think is the one that comes to mind for most people, is like, how are we getting there and how are we getting home? Like, am I going to need to be giving you a ride? Or, you know, or like, yeah, if it's screen time, like, are we using, like, what kind of devices are we using? But then I actually want to add one more. So like, we have the who, what, where, when, and how. I want to add one more how. How are we communicating, right? So how are my child and I going to communicate if plans change?
Oh, yes.
So you go change. To leave the house, right? They go to leave the house.
Yeah.
This is the plan. And then they show up at so-and-so's house and someone else has a different plan. And it might not, like most of the time, it's not because they're being sneaky that the plans change.
No.
Right? Plans just change. That happens to me. Like, but that there's a plan for how you can communicate.
Yes.
So those are just a couple questions. Who is my child with and what do I know about them? What is my child doing there? Where are they? When are they going to be home or leaving? How are they getting there and getting home? And how are we going to communicate when the plans change?
Absolutely. So. Those are so great, especially because they kind of hit all of the areas. And here's a really important key to think about if you're thinking, oh my gosh, that's my child is not going to appreciate this. This is going to make them feel like they're being interrogated. And that's not it at all. It's it's really just one of the ways that we as parents keep our kids safe. But you hit on that last one. It's also a way to have open communication. Mm-hmm. And then what does research tell us? Research tells us that communicating with our kids has more impact on a warm, positive relationship with them. And then guess what? They're less likely to deceive us. So yes, it's not an interrogation. It's really kind of a holistic way to have a warm relationship with our child, help them make better choices, prevent them from making decisions that, you know, may be detrimental to them. And honestly, I think that the idea of asking and thinking through those questions also helps us take a moment to stop, breathe, talk. Helps put us into that mindset.
Absolutely. Well, and yeah, you mentioned it's not an interrogation because like a bunch of the time, several of these questions would be answered in the initial ask, right? So like, hey, mom, can I go to so-and-so's house to do blank before supper?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, okay, so I know who they're with. And, you know, let's say I know who that person is. I know where they are. I know they want to do it before supper. And so the only question I might need to ask is like, okay, when are you heading out? What time will you be home? You know, like, how are you going to get a hold of me? Right? Mm-hmm. And the great thing about having this kind of, this is the kind of stuff I always want to know, is that your kids can begin to anticipate it.
Yes.
Right? And so they might learn, like, okay, my mom's going to ask how I'm getting home, and she's not going to let me go unless I have a plan. You know, or like, my dad is always going to ask what we're doing there, or whatever. They can begin to anticipate that. And so it doesn't even half the time end up as any kind of questions you even need to ask, because they might divulge that.
Absolutely.
Or if they happen to leave out a detail, sometimes, right, they might do that if they think there's an iffy one.
Maybe.
And they're like, wait, so who's going to be there?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so it just gives you that chance to kind of run through that reflection of like, do I have all the information to help keep my child safe?
Exactly. When,
wherever, whatever they're going to be doing. So just a couple reflection questions for us to think through as we think about monitoring our kids at lots of different ages. So we've walked through a lot here on monitoring, but I'm guessing we haven't covered it all, and that Mackenzie DeYoung, our producer, will have a question for us. Hopefully not a stumper, coming in with an off the cuff.
Hey, Gans.
Hello.
So one word that came to my mind as I was listening to you speak and that I thought maybe other people might think of is the term helicopter parent.
Ooh.
So can you tell me how to maybe bridge the gap between am I being a helicopter parent or are you telling me to be a helicopter parent and monitoring?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I would first say, okay, so to you that phrase means helicopter, hovering, making decisions for, getting them out of situations. Is that
for? Are you saying for me?
Yes.
So,
definition of helicopter parent.
Well, I mean, I think it's one of those phrases that a lot of people kind of assign their own definition to because we don't often get a definition. It's just, well, they're being a helicopter parent. I would say if I were to think about what I think that is, it would be like the parent that is always jumping in and like that, you know, when Mackenzie was talking about climbing, that is always like, oh no, owie, or jumping in or making sure they're here. I know exactly where you are every minute of every day. So how do we bridge that gap?
Okay. So I think that the really important thing is to consider that point that we talked about, which was, is what they're doing and choosing destructive? And sure. So, you know, focusing in on, is the decision destructive? Is who they're hanging out with destructive? Is their physical activity about to be destructive as they fall off the table?
Mm-hmm.
And so when it comes to that, you know, that big of a word, destructive, then that's monitoring.
Sure.
You know, that is saving your child's physical, emotional, you know, cognitive health because you are monitoring them. What do you think, Mackenzie? Is that a
that's I thought right along the same lines, honestly. So yes, when I think of helicopter, you know, that word hover, you know, is a big part of what people go with helicopter parenting. I think of, defining, is this destructive? Can help us find that line, right? That was one part of your question. But I think another part of helicopter parenting can be related to that question in that sometimes people assume helicopter parenting is being too involved, right?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And so I would say part of it can be preventing natural consequences, mm-hmm. right? So helicopter parenting can be not letting our child do the things that might come with a natural consequence to them because we're helicopter parenting, which is different than preventing things from being destructive. You know, so I think of like actually a big one right now. My daughter doesn't like to wear her coat.
I knew that was coming in.
Yes, you knew it. Did I say that recently? I wasn't told that story. She doesn't like to wear a coat. And as a parent, it is winter in Iowa. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you have to bring your coat. Like, okay, natural consequence. If you don't want to put your coat on, you might be cold in the car. Mm-hmm. But you will have your coat because not having a coat in the middle of winter in Iowa is not safe. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's part of the difference between monitoring and helicopter parenting is this destructive or do I just not want my child to experience a consequence from the world? And so I think that's a difference. But I also think another really important part of it, sorry if I can drag on, is another important part of it is that some other parents might perceive your monitoring as helicopter parenting.
Sure.
Parents have different styles of parenting, right? Mm-hmm. And it looks different to everybody. But feeling confident in my job is this, even if your child's friends are like, geez, my mom never, geez, my, you know, parents never. So knowing that might look different, that definition, like you said, varies from people to people.
Right.
But that there is research to say, monitoring my kids and where they're at and who they're with helps keep them safe and helps prevent those destructive, right, risky behaviors. Yeah. So I think preparing yourself that, if I'm asking these things, there might be another parent who says, well, geez, that could happen.
And I just have to say, thank you so much. That actually, you know, sometimes I ask the question with a like expectation of what you're going to say. And that one, I was really like, how do we get there? I do have to say, I think I need to give my mom a little bit of credit and a little more grace.
Some kudos.
Because so I don't live in the same town as my parents, but I do visit them quite often. Mm-hmm. And every time my mom, send me a text when you get there, send me a text when you leave. And it's like, Mom, I know you don't worry. You don't ever make me text you every time I leave my house to go to the office. Why do I? But she, you know, it's that monitoring my parents were really good about that. When I was a kid, I was scared to, you know, go places I wasn't supposed to go because I knew I would have consequences for that. So I have to give my mom a little more credit than I do sometimes.
Yes. The limit setting, right? It keeps us safe. It keeps us out of trouble, keeps our kids out of trouble. Just knowing that our parents might know is something.
That's enough to keep you out of trouble sometimes. So
yes.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thanks, friends. I loved that question. That's such a good one. Yes. So talking about monitoring, you know, we understanding what it is, you know, that the research tells us there's a lot of benefits to it. And then we also got a chance to kind of talk through what's it look like to monitor, right? Lots of us have multiple kids. Okay. I'm monitoring my toddler. I'm monitoring my school ager, right? Teenager all the way through. And then also just giving ourselves some reflection questions of what is the kind of information that I need to keep my kids safe, right? That's what monitoring is all about. Keeping them safe in person and online, and so having the chance to do that. And so that is monitoring, but next week we look at the second M, which of the RPM3 model, which is mentoring, which I feel like is a little bit like, what do you mean mentoring?
Are you about to tell me that I have to be my child's best friend?
Ooh, I'm not, but but so next week we'll dive into that topic of like, okay, what do they mean when they say mentor? Do I even do this? Maybe. So come back and listen with us next week to hear a little bit more about what's a lifelong perspective of mentoring and parenting?
Yes. So thanks for joining us today on the Science of Parenting podcast. Remember to subscribe to our weekly audio podcast on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. And you can watch the show on video each week. You can also join us on Facebook and Twitter at Science of a Parent to see our content in your feed.
Absolutely. So please do come along with us as we talk about the ups and downs, the ins and outs, and the research and reality all around the science of parenting.
The Science of Parenting is hosted by Lori Kothals and Mackenzie Johnson, produced by Mackenzie DeYoung, with research and writing by Barbara Dunn Swanson. Send in questions and comments to parenting@iastate.edu and connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. This institution is an equal opportunity provider. For the full non-discrimination statement or accommodation inquiries, go to www.extension.iastate.edu/diversity/ext.